You're listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. You can find out more about the resource and construction industry, including how to communicate consciously with your stakeholders at resourceindustrymedia.com.au.
Welcome to the Connecting Industry Podcast, brought to you by Resource Industry Media. I'm Kieran Moran, Managing Director of Resource Industry Media. The Connecting Industry Podcast series is designed to tell the stories of the people who work in the resource and construction sector throughout Australia. It's our goal for these podcasts to not only keep you up to date with the latest resource and construction news, information and procurement opportunities, but most importantly, build relationships between you and our guests so you can connect with their stories and get a better understanding of how to communicate and tell your business story right. On this week's Connecting Industry Podcast, we have Joseph Adair, Senior Ecologist at Green Tape Solutions, a consultancy specialising in environmental assessments, environmental approvals, ecological surveys and environmental auditing for private and public sectors within major infrastructure, mining, renewable energy and residential developments. Before joining Green Tape Solutions, Joe worked within the environmental sector as Project Coordinator and Sanctuary Manager for the Australian Wildlife Conservancy, consultant to Arrow Energy and Papuan Oil Search, and Principal Ecologist for the Santos GLNG Project and for the Queensland Government's Parks and Wildlife Service. Welcome, Joe, to the program.
Hello, Kieran.
Thank you for joining us today. Much appreciated. I'm sure you're a very busy man. Let's start at the beginning. I'm actually going to go back and hopefully you can remember your youth, but what inspired you? As I went through a lot of the lists there, you've been involved in ecological work for quite a long time, so with the environmental and approval, so forth, and worked on a number of projects to, I suspect, to make sure that they are doing right by the environment and so forth. But let's go back, and what inspired you to get into this type of work?
Well, Kieran, it goes back right to my very, very young days when we worked on a farm in the Eastern Darling Downs. That was a family property, and it had been in our family for three generations at that time, so when I was a child. And I remember walking through the forest on the downs. It was not far from the Bunya Mountains, so right on that foothills of the Bunya Mountains with my grandfather. And he was telling me about all the koala bears that used to be there and back at the time, or koalas. He called them koala bears. And as we were walking through, he said, these trees used to be full of koala bears. And there was none. Around the 1920s, as people may remember or cast their minds back or experience from books and diaries, etc., that was an era when koala pelts were extremely popular as a fur and as an ornament, I suppose, for women in New York, London, Australia, Sydney, wherever. And koalas were hunted extremely successfully, if you like, and furs were taken. So it decimated the populations. And that what decimated the population of koalas then. And ever since that day, I've always had an interest in wildlife populations and their conservation throughout the landscape. And that prompted me to do environmental science through Griffith University when I went into university. I followed on from high school. I remember telling my friends at school at the time that I was going to do environmental science. They all scoffed and said, well, why don't you do something like lawyer or education or accounting or whatever else, the more mainstream things. I said, no, that doesn't interest me. I want to be a ecologist and I want to work on national parks. So I did my studies and passed. I joined Queensland Parks and Wildlife Service and I spent over 32 years with Queensland Parks and Wildlife Service in a range of different jobs, managing national parks in central Queensland, regional manager for wildlife branch and forestry, etc., within central Queensland. And then after I'd done a lot of work with environmental offsets, environmental strategies, planning, implementation of management arrangements around threatened species and plants within large-scale projects such as coal mines, ports, wind farms at the time, and particularly the CSG industry, I was provided an opportunity by Santos to help them do their work. And I thought, well, I've spent so much time working on this stuff, making it happen at the compliance level. What's it like on the other side and how does that work? So I was really interested to see how those things are implemented on ground for a major project. And I went and worked with Santos for 2.5 years on the GLNG project.
So, okay, then let's just again go back a little bit. As you said, 32 years with the Queensland Parks and Wildlife. And I suppose when you started, we're not going to give away your age here, but when you did start, it would have been a very different way that everyone looked at it, the government, the community, and so forth in regard to the environment. So tell us a little bit about what it was like that time when you first got into it and how that has sort of changed.
Well, I'm not sure that a whole lot has changed, but certainly Queensland Parks and Wildlife Service, when I started, and I started in 1980 with Queensland Parks and Wildlife Service, so that's quite a few years ago. At that time, it had only just split away from Forestry Department. So Forestry Department was the lead agency with respect to land management and community commercial use of lands across Queensland. At that time, and certainly Australia as well. So it was about timber harvesting, the timber industry, and much of it was done sustainably. There was a lot of work done by forestry to make their work sustainable, and some of the best conservation people I've worked with over the years were forestry. But National Parks became, I suppose, the lead agency over the years, and probably due to a whole range of community perceptions around and understanding around land clearing, vegetation management, and the recognition that the lands and the forestry areas and national parks that were retained needed to be protected better than what they were at the time. So the parks estate in Queensland at the time was quite small, and I think it was less than 1% of the area. And ideally, I remember the magic figure we were looking for was 4% of the national parks across Queensland, to give some representation of the majority of the ecosystems that occur within Queensland and be able to manage those so they have some degree of maintenance in perpetuity, if you like. So that changed a lot. The budgets with National Parks, when I started working, I remember having to go to get permission to buy a spark plug for a lawnmower, and I was questioned about why I needed two, not one, because I'd always thought that a spare would be useful. So yeah, we didn't have very much money, and that's still pretty much the case. Not that you have two spark plugs, but the national parks are run on pretty tight budget. So yeah, it was always a very interesting process to get a lot done on not much money.
So as you said there as well, you started then to after 32 years, and you worked in a number of different areas, just the Queensland, the Wildlife Service and so forth. You worked across a number of areas, but then you started to, after a number of years, you've started to move into industry, I suppose, in relation to infrastructure and mining. So what made you get into that?
Okay, so when I was with parks, I moved away from protected area management, so national park management, into an area of off national park management, because it occurred to me and many others as well that you can't just protect isolated patches of vegetation and say that that job's done. We were looking at the impacts that people have across the landscape, the remainder of the area of Queensland, with the natural resources that are there, and then how they were managed and how those impacts were managed and what you do to have sustainable development, whilst at the same time recognising that the rest of Queensland is essential to maintaining our natural biodiversity and our natural values and our way of life within Queensland and Australia. And if we don't maintain that properly, then we will lose huge opportunities sooner and later, and certainly into the future. So we need to look, and that's what we're looking at, is how we maintain and manage those off-park conservation areas, which is why I got into the industry side of things and that area development. Because at the time when we were doing it, wildlife rangers and our team spent a lot of time removing snakes and possums out of people's roofs, because that was what the community wanted. They wanted someone to come and take the wildlife away. But the problem with that is it's very small beer, it just looks at the impacts for a person and someone feels good. And to do it effectively, you need a heap of staff right across the country, which we didn't have. So we would only service small areas in that work. What we needed to do was to work with industry, with local government, particularly councils, particularly the big industry players, and the Farmers Federation, etc., to take them on a journey with us to conserve and work with our natural environmental capital right across Queensland. And that's what we did. So we started working with large organisations, with councils, and saying to them that you need to think about how to manage these natural areas that you're impacting and the natural values which are on your properties or on the lands that you manage. How is that done so that you can have your farming operation, your mining enterprise, your railway line, and have the least impact to our wildlife and to our natural capital into the future? So we did that, and that was around the early 2000s right through to the late 2000s. And we started to develop a lot of strategies around community engagement, nature conservation, offset strategies throughout Queensland, and things like fauna management planning, vegetation planning, protected plants planning, and those sorts of activities, which have now become enshrined in legislation and applied to that. So that was a very interesting time and a very challenging time, and one which was a lot of fun too.
You mentioned there in relation to community engagement, which is one of the most important things in relation to being able to explain to the community with such big projects and so forth going on that environment is protected. What's some of the issues that you have come across with, like you've worked directly on some of these projects and you know that it's the project is going as best as it can or as far as it can with protecting ecology and so forth around the area. Of course, some has to be mitigated against as well. But in relation to the community and having a clear understanding, a lot of the time media may take advantage because it's a big project. A lot of people will, you know, not understand it properly and also just believe in a way that big business is just going to destroy the environment. What's some of the issues that you might have come across there or some of the disappointments that you might have come across there in relation to the community not understanding that those companies are going as far as they can go?
I think for me, the big learning curve, and there were certainly some issues, but for me, the big learning curve was that companies, and particularly very large companies or anyone really doing the work, has a couple of interests. One is they want to stay within the scope of the legislation and the law. So if you want some of this stuff to happen, it's got to be enshrined in legislation and have a driver. If that's not the case, then community legislation is really important. If it's not followed by legislation, well, then you don't have a case to articulate. So you've got to get community on board to say, look, this is important to us. The conservation of nature, the conservation of values on our environmental front is important to the community because it supports our economic, social and cultural lifestyles and our backgrounds. So we need to have a fairly simple and consistent rhetoric around that, and we used to have some very good language around those things. We still do, and I think the language is there and people are learning. And it's a constant curve. You've got to bring people along with you. And that's why we went with the large corporations, because by and large, they have an interest in maintaining compliance with the legislation because that supports their social capital to operate. So if you can get them on board, then their workers who work for them also have an obligation to support the social license that they use. And if they don't support social license of the employer, then they can't work for that organisation. There's a disjunctive value. So you've got to have an alignment of values with all persons on the street. And that then flows out onto how people behave in their day jobs and then with their relationships with their families and friends and everyone else. So it flows on through that process. So that's part of that community engagement. But you must have the consistent story. You must be consistent about how that's delivered and how that's presented to people. Then where there's some disappointments, I suppose, despite our best efforts, and engineers and other people are wonderful, but they've also got to get the job done. So they sometimes may take shortcuts and or not clearly understand the process and the strategies that need to be applied to mitigate or minimise impacts. And that's sometimes and often where you see mistakes being made. But generally, the mistakes are made when there's no planning to be done in the first instance. So someone's not thought about it, not looked at the issues, not conceived the matters around environmental impacts, and not had strategies to deal with it. And then you have a long-term impact that goes on for a long time. And restoration works is particularly challenging, very difficult. So that does happen from time to time, and that is often disappointing because you lose opportunities for species and you lose species. The Brigalow Land Clearing Scheme, which was done many years ago, without that current knowledge and without that insight, has probably led to the demise of hundreds of reptiles and species, which we'll never see. We'll never know that they were there. And that's been well documented by the Queensland Museum, Janet Kavakovich and others that looked at those losses. So our slow decline of our native wildlife population, plants and animals, is probably one of the biggest disappointments about how that works. And that's going to be our challenge into the future, is to how to maintain those populations whilst encouraging and allowing and working with development for the needs of community.
Okay, so you moved on after working with a number of the projects and so forth, and so by this time you've got quite a few years of experience. And am I correct in relation to Green Tape Solutions, which is a business that you work in? Were you one of the founders of that business?
No, I'd like to say that I was, but no. Kelly Matthews was the founder of it back in 2006. I did start my own business around the same time. And for me, that was quite an experience moving from government, corporate sectors, where there's a whole heap of support around business modelling and et cetera, which I did some work with Arrow and All Search in New Guinea, which was really good and kept me busy for some time. But to be quite frank, I had to learn quite a bit about how to market myself and market the business. And Kelly has done that exceptionally well with Green Tape Solutions. And we've got a small team. When I started, there was four people in the team, and we've now grown to over seven. But, we're still a small team, but we're very flexible. And we have quite a number of other people available to us throughout Queensland and New South Wales, which we can engage when and as we need right across the organisation. So it's one of those groups that has great capabilities to expand given the tasks that we might want to be taking on.
Yes, as you said there, in relation to the marketing of your own business and so forth. And of course, we have a lot of business owners that do listen to this podcast. It can be very difficult in managing all aspects of a business. Okay, so some of the projects, you don't need to name them or anything like that, but you're working on a number of projects. So in the Rockhampton region, as far as I know, and all around, I would suspect. But some of them from wind to solar. Talk about some of those projects which we're getting more and more these days.
We are certainly indeed. We're getting a lot of interest in solar farms and wind farms. And we're working on quite a number of those both small and large projects. We do have significant involvement in the Clark Creek Wind Farm, which has happened since its inception. And that's through the ecological studies and a whole range of elements following on from that in terms of doing the mitigation works and offset strategy planning, etc. With respect to the other wind farms, we've had a significant involvement in the Cooper's Gap Wind Farm down near Kingaroy there, between Kingaroy and Dalby. And we worked on that project for about 2.5 years or more, and that was a good project. And we've also started engagement with some other wind farms, which are still concepts throughout central Queensland and in northern New South Wales, and certainly the same with solar farms, where we're working with some of those as well in terms of their arrangements with the environmental impacts and also auditing. So, we've got quite a bit of work in those areas that
And what keeps us
quite busy.
Of course, you know, we're getting more and more investment with renewable energy, of course, and so solar and wind farms been around for a while now, but we're getting a lot more throughout Australia. Let some people know in relation to, people, you know, they've seen pictures of solar farms, they see pictures of the wind farms. So you've got, you know, the solar panels standing there in a field and so forth, and also with the wind farms. So what sort of impact does something like that have on with the job that you are doing? So, of course, you know, it might be an area that might need to be cleared a little bit within a substantial area to that point, or one that's already cleared and in a farming property. But what's some of the ecological issues that you do come across with those sort of projects?
Okay, so wind farms, environmental issues relating to wind farms typically revolve around impact with animals, birds mostly, with the wind turbines. This is one of the key impacts that the Commonwealth government and the state government's concerned about. And there's lots of things that we can do to mitigate that, such as turbine siting, determining which species are going to interact with the wind farm, look at the periods of the year when particular turbines might not be operating to protect particular birds or bird species. The other impacts with relating to turbines and wind farms particular is access tracks into the turbine itself. So the fans or the blades on the turbines are quite long, up to 75 metres long. So that means the access tracks have to be quite straight in places. And selecting a suitable route through vegetation is one of the major challenges. And that's where we get involved in terms of helping with that, identifying threatened species that might be in those alignments, and then how to mitigate impacts to those species or avoid them and do that sort of process. So that's one of the elements that we've done with wind farms. The solar farms, the environmental impacts of solar farms are typically they are located in an area that's already been cleared, so they don't have to re-clear, and it's advantageous that they don't do that, so there's no negative impact to native vegetation which might be there and fauna which lives in that vegetation. Probably the main environmental impact from a solar farm is the visual aspect. So someone's nearby, they get out there and look at it and see a very large area of shiny black metal, which is to some people disturbing, and they don't necessarily like that. So that's one of the elements that we look at when they're siting a solar farm, and then looking at how you might have shading vegetation around it just to break up the line or the sight lines across that particular solar farm.
Okay, well, actually, we're at the end of the podcast. It goes very quick, Joe, so thank you very much for joining us. But just to let people know, how can they get a hold of Green Tape Solutions?
Okay, so we have a website, Green Tape Solutions, where people can get a hold of us through that. Just type in Green Tape Solutions and that will come up to our website. And there's a simple form there that people can fill in and access our services. Now, our services are not only related to large developments, but we do a lot of work in bushfire assessments for residential development, and also ecological environmental assessments for residential developments and urban planning. So it's quite one of our keystone activities that we do.
Okay, well, thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, thank you very much, Kieran.
You've been listening to the Connecting Industry Podcast interview series with Kieran Moran from Resource Industry Media. To find out more about the resource and construction industry, including past podcasts, news and events, go to resourceindustrymedia.com.au.